This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bites. We're back at work, aren't we?
Happy Boxing Day.
Happy Boxing Day.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We are all here in the studio, of course. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Majida Hashim.
With you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can get us on Twitter or at BFM Radio or, of course, on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're going to be kicking off very shortly with a Christmas story to wrap up with. I mean, we're not going to have many more Christmas stories, of course, for the rest of the week. And I thought this could be a nice little sweet one. We'll then be moving on to a story about VR and Sports, a company in India that's managed to land $14 million US dollars for expansion. Then a local story, Proton versus Peridua, a rivalry that should help boost the auto sector in 2018, back here locally, of course. Then moving on to a co-working unicorn called Your Work. They've secured $45 million US dollars for Series C to expand into smaller cities. Then on to a whole bunch of food tech stories.
Yeah.
Right? Majid is clearly hungry. Yum. Right. Let's quickly talk about this. This AI and Christmas stuff. So obviously we've been talking about AI quite a bit recently. We mentioned a story back at Halloween about how AI were writing their own horror stories. This is a different AI that's writing, rewriting Christmas, you might say. So what is becoming apparently an annual tradition, artificial intelligence is having a bit of a bash at writing Christmas carols with lyrics like Christmas Brewery or the Wang. The neural network isn't likely to come up with something to replace Jingle Bells just yet, but it did somehow dream up a whole new bit of Christmas folklore to rival Santa and Krampus. So as AI researcher Janelle Shane explains on her website, AI weirdness. She rather cruelly forced a neural network to devise Christmas carols with literally no help. Not only did it not have any instructions, but it didn't even start out knowing English. It just had a data set of 240 carols to learn from and is set about smashing together letters and comparing them to existing carols to see what looked right and what didn't, then repeating the process.
Hence Christmas Burha or...
Correct, correct. Okay. I will quickly read one or two of what it wrote. Heart von the Burr, the Her, the Burr Wong on the store Christmas Burr, Her, or the Wong. Clearly, that's not going to be memorable. As you can see, a lot of the words aren't words at all, though you can see the beginnings of the English language start to form. I like this one, though. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. I want to give it to you. Ding dong, Christmas Day. That's the kind of thing that a bunch of very close friends would be talking about. You
but,
know?
But the early bit, you could have been speaking Welsh.
Absolutely. But then it goes on. This is a new standard. It's Christmas time, pee time story with my baby tonight. This is when AI has gone horribly wrong. You know, this is when you're like, yeah, just stop a little bit. But I think it's kind of funny. I mean, I think it's nice that they're doing something a little bit different with it. And the idea of AI just playing around and just kind of finding its own feet, whether it be Christmas or Halloween. You know, we talk about all these really scary things about AI and what it's up to and what it might be doing. This is a nice little kind of, you know, sometimes it can be a little bit silly too.
The thing about Christmas is it's a lot of fun. So depending on when you're reading that, it's Christmas Eve or just after Christmas dinner or the next Christmas morning, it's all about having fun.
Right.
So it is very fun lyrics. It's the kind of carols per se that you and your friend will get around and try to make up tunes for.
Yeah.
I think.
But apparently the Sandman is something that keeps turning up in the Christmas carols. It's become somewhat of a central figure in a lot of the stuff that it writes. I mean, I would read you one of the little carols that it's wrote tonight, but there is a swear word in it. But I can read this one.
Okay.
The Sandman so be joyful now, it was born today. Gloria in excelsis Deo.
The Sandman.
So that's our Christmas story out of the way for today. A bit of AI done. Moving on, VR and sports.
Are landing, we playing Metallica a little later?
We might well do, yes. $14 million expansion for this company called Smash.
Yeah, Smash with three A's in the middle. So Smash.
Okay.
So it's a VR and sports-oriented VR center. It's a gaming arcade. It has raised $14 million US in funding from HNIs, which are high net worth individuals. They won't name their clients, but they are from Avendus Wealth Management.
Right.
This comes a month after the company already secured $3.9 million US in funding from consumer-focused investment firm Sixth Sense Ventures. And the newly raised funding will go towards expansion of its arcade and event centers. So what Smash is that it is an offline VR-oriented gaming sports center. The startup operates a chain of bowling party spaces and customized indoor gaming centers in India with multiple digital entertainment centers for cricket, go-kart, bowling, and other recreational activities. If you go on their website, you can organize everything from birthday parties to pre-wedding parties to corporate events, which are sports VR. And that's what they specialize in. At any of the centers, they you can even host kids' children's birthday parties. So it's for a range of ages. They are Smash is backed by Sachin Tendulkar.
Yeah, all right.
So he is a renowned cricketer and sports investment fund. Fidelis World. Yeah. In 2014, and they have acquired 39% stake in Smash for US$10.8 million. So this is a very well funded company that has raised more funds. What's interesting is that VR has taken off in such a big way
in India
that if you go to their website, they're everywhere. They've got at least 5 to almost 10 centers where you can go there and host events in AR. This company was started in 2012 by Indian businessman and film director and film producer Shripal Morakla.
So we know where the money's coming from then.
Yeah, he has been in the entertainment center industry for a while and he knows what people want to see. He's just taking it from another level now, from the film screen to VR screens. The first center was set up in Mumbai, spans 40,000 square feet. The company now operates, it's 30 centers around India. Actually, you can book about 10 centers online, but there are about 30 other centers in India across urban areas. Gurugram,
Hyderabad,
Bengaluru, Noida,
and Ludhiana.
Yeah.
It's interesting. There's a little quote at the bottom I like where he says, "We're not in the traditional toys and games business. All of us outgrow that."
Yeah.
The whole idea is to take these experiences to the next level in the virtual reality space. Mm. That's fine. I don't know. I mean, if we even look at Umapag and Apike Bagan, you can see he's never grown out of the traditional toy and game business. You know, but the idea of moving into that kind of virtual and that augmented space is clearly something that's... It's going to be 2018. Right. That's what we're going to be talking about, isn't it? I mean, you were looking at the Starbucks thing earlier this year, where you can go on virtual tours of this huge Starbucks things in augmented reality.
Yes.
Clearly, there's a lot of money being thrown at it.
And the thing
why India, though? I mean, why is it suddenly taking off in India?
It is interesting that it's taking off in India, of all places. I mean, where entertainment is concerned, that's where the home of Bollywood
is a huge hub,
right? That's the entertainment epicenter of people who are very, very hardcore into entertainment itself. They really throw themselves into
There's Bollywood,
and Hollywood.
So that's where the home of this is. So if they were to take this passion into another level, it would be VR. And I'll be talking this a bit later as well. But VR is getting cheaper. It's getting so much more accessible now. And if you can escape to another world, it would be through this medium.
And I can see, like, coming up from India, because they all speak English, you know, right? And you can see with that opportunity, you can also go around the world.
Huge IT infrastructure, of course.
And because it's backed up by this cricketer. Sachin. And then they're so passionate about sports over there. So you're marrying two of their passions together, cricket and escapism and entertainment together.
I'm just thinking about cricket in augmented reality space. It's probably the only time the Brits might win something. Anyway.
On their website, they also have the page where they put up important people who have been to their centre, and they've had the whole Indian cricket team that has been there, and all of them have approved and endorsed this medium.
Of course they have. Yeah. Right. Time for a short break and some music. And when we come back, though, a Proton Paradua rivalry that should boost the auto sector here in 2018. Music, though, from Block Party. This is Banquet, coming up right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Breaking financial matters, BFM 89.9.
Back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Majida Hashim.
So, Frida, tell me about this Proton Paradua rivalry.
All right, so we're talking about cars. Would you believe it? I am talking about cars. This is an article that came out in The Star, and it says that the Malaysian automotive industry looks set for a much-needed shake-up in 2018, following a lackluster couple of years. And this is, of course, this is the Malaysian automotive industry. So you've got your Proton, you've got your Paradua. And so what happened was that the success of Paradua, third generation MyV, which was launched last month, it says it will surely continue dominate the market well into 2018, while former market leader Proton, obviously determined to reclaim its throne with its strategic partners, Zhejiang Geely Holding, Geely. And so so what happened was the total industry volume hit 580,124 units last year, or TIV, meeting the Malaysia Automotive Association's target of 580,000 units for 2016.
Brilliant.
So currently, year-to-date, November 2017, vehicle sales stood at 521,907 units. I'm going to read through this. But they expect a 1.7-year-on-year TIV growth to 590,000 units. So I guess what happens here is you can actually read the article for the figures. To many, the launch of new Myvi is deemed timely and considered a game-changer model for the company. And it will spark new interest in subdued and dull industry. So I think, so what's happened here is also they're hoping that with this story that Perodua will up their game.
Right.
Because they haven't been number one in a long time, right? And Myvi was Malaysia's best-selling car until the end of 2014 before being taken over by their own brand. Right.
See, I'm not surprised about this at all. I mean, when the new Myvi launched, 44,000 ringgit or something like that, right?
Right. It's 44,300,
right.
And 20,000 units has been booked within the month.
Right, and it has all the features that you expect from a fancier car, all the airbags, all the safety features, everything. When you've got a manufacturer that's doing that and identifying needs that we've all wanted from day one at a budget price, how can you not want to buy something like this? You know, local car.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're just talking about, you know, my first car and your first car, right? Was a Kanchil for me. We're Perodua,
was a Kalisa. Mm. I'm still driving it now.
Right, and it was, you felt it was value for money,
right?
Right,
yeah.
And the price you pay for and minimal issues with the car,
right? Mm. I still see them like that. I mean, I was driving around in one, it was 7 or 8 years old, and I was just telling you off air.
Okay.
The only thing that ever went wrong with the thing was the air conditioning unit. Mm. Every now and again would give me a little bit of hassle, but that's something you can get fixed fairly recently, fairly decently.
So he's talking about a Myvi here. The Myvi has been Perodua's premium range model. Its competitive pricing and proven ability will drive sales for the company and boost TIV. So he added a new Myvi will hit hard on Proton's Iris model, which is deemed the direct competitor of the Myvi, right? Now, let's move on a little bit to Proton. So Proton has been losing market share for years. The major factor enabled Perodua to overtake Proton in sales in the domestic market was the former Myvi model. So in 2006, Perodua, that's 2006, it's almost 10 years ago, captured 30% of market share compared to Proton's 27%. But, you know, now with years of talks, Proton needed a strategic foreign partner, and of course, the recent one being Geely, which now owns 49.9% in Proton as of September this year. So they're hoping that they will be able to come up with a new brand. And this is a car that's called, very interestingly, it's called Boyu.
What does that mean?
Okay, so apparently Boyu does really well in China, and they're hoping they'll be able to do that as well. I'm just going to go through this. And the thing is, according to reports, the Boyu is expected to arrive in Malaysia in the second half of 2018. And an automotive analyst says the Boyu would appeal to Malaysians and rival the likes of the Honda CR-V and Mazda CX-5.
Right, right.
So it's not in the regular car standard. It's in the, what do you call it?
The next step up.
It's like SUV. It's an SUV, right? So that kind of thing. But you know, with a name like Boyu, which
I think they definitely have to change your name when you come
because
here.
Boyu in Hokkien means no oil.
Oh wow!
So we might, you know, have to change that a little bit. No, you know, and we always start.
Wow, they must have done their research, the market research for that. Surely, you would hope so.
I hope so. So anyway, a couple of things for the analyst says that it says that the research house says is slashing its 2018 to 2020 net profit forecast by 67% to 200%. This is for Proton, right? After assuming Proton loses in the interim. Until Geely makes his presence felt. Because, okay, key risk to our recommendation, this is according to RHB research and target price, he says, include the inability to obtain regulatory approvals, worsening customer sentiment, and weaker than expected economic growth. So I think for the longest time, you know, that's the challenge with Proton. it hasn't had much good press, right?
Right.
And even with this partnership, they hope there'll be a cultural synergy for the Proton-Geely partnership. Both parties have to work very hard to ensure there are no cultural clashes in terms of expectations and quality issues at the manufacturing and after-sales level. So it'd be interesting to see. September partnership just started, right? But Geely saw its first half 2017 net profit jump 128% to 4.34 billion yuan. With sales jumping 89% in the first 6 months of this year, the company has raised its 2017 sales target by 10% to 1.1 million vehicles. Of course, this is on a global scale, right? And vehicles engineered with Volvo technology, because they also own Volvo, such as the GC9 sedan and the BoYu sports utility vehicle, has been a hit in China, which is the world's biggest auto market. So we'll see if BoYu will make it big here. The BoYu is priced from 98,800 yuan to 157,800 yuan, which is a slightly cheaper than the Honda CR-V and Mazda CX-5.
SUVs, though, or the kind of MyV kind of style?
Yeah, so that's the thing,
that's
right?
That's the big difference,
so
right?
So no one's in that. The other one being Iris was the main competition. So I just want to talk about the perception game, right? To some, there's still the perception that China manufactured vehicles are inferior, especially when compared to Korean and Japanese models, right? So while the BoYu is already a successful model, the local market still needs to be convinced that it's a product that's worth owning, right? You do. I agree.
I
haven't even gotten past the Korean cars.
Right.
So that's me, right? So Proton certainly is no stranger to perception issues. While the days of poor quality parts, such as the infamous power window winder woes, are long gone, that's on the left side of the car. Yeah. Proton now offers a lifetime warranty for its power windows.
Do they now?
Yeah. But you see, I don't know about it. I don't hear about it. Right. So it's just sort of fixated in mind that I don't. I'm not even looking for
that would be the thing. Whenever I'd get into a Perodua, that would be the first thing that somebody would talk to me about. You know, yes. When I first moved here, they're known for their power window issues.
Right.
Really?
So there you go. So the bad reputation the company has garnered over the years has shown no sign of dissipation. And analysts says that negative consumer perception of Proton's quality has impacted the national car maker for many years. Poor perception has led to distrust in the brand and ultimately lagging sales. So we'll see whether this, 2018, whether, you know, BoYu will come in to save the day, what they're doing in that space, it might be, we'll find out.
Regina?
I don't know, because I would like to think that more people are moving into public transportation, but even then so, because we have the new LRT lines, people are still buying cars. I see that the people buying cars... They're the
Grab and Uber car drivers.
Yeah, that's what I was about to bring up. So the government had this incentive which gives incentive for people who buy Proton cars to become Grab and Uber drivers, and it would be interesting to see this grade of cars go into that line, because a lot of the cars are now MyVs or MyVs out there, or is the old Iris model. To have some kind of option, which is a higher grade SUV, especially those who need rides to go to the airport and need more luggage room,
but then,
right?
That's a fair point. But if you're going to be a Grab or an Uber driver, you want the most value for your money, right? And if you're only paying 44,000, whatever it is, for a MyV compared to 100,000 for an SUV, you know. I don't know.
This is very interesting here. You've got a 5-year time frame to work with to change perceptions. It says here, an industry observer says a typical car manufacturer needs to be able to recoup its high development costs by the end of the vehicle's product life cycle, or else they would risk making losses. So vehicle model development costs in lower cost economies can be from 500 million to 600 million ringgit, right? And a typical vehicle model has a life cycle of around 5 years. Therefore, to be profitable, the model would need to achieve cumulative volumes of at least 200,000 units over that 5-year period. So,
right. So
that's the kind of shelf life, that's the kind of money. Yeah. If you don't do that within the 5 years, you're probably running at a loss.
What's interesting is that Grab has these tiers, right? So you have the tiers for the normal cars, then if you have a better car, then you have a different tier and you have an option to choose what car that you want, maybe of a higher tier. This could be people who will want to aim for that higher tier, the different kind of market. That could be an option.
Right, we have to take a break. We've got some music coming up from Aerosmith with Ragdoll, followed by a little bit of Elvis. When we come back, a co-working unicorn, Your Work, secures $45 million for Series C to expand into smaller cities in China. Don't go anywhere. You listen to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9.
The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Frida Liu
and Majida Hashim.
On to story number four. Co-working unicorn, Your Work, secures $45 million US dollars for Series C to expand into smaller cities. The rising concept of the co-working space is driving the mobile working style that modern urban professionals have today. I don't know about co-working spaces, I have to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of these kind of spaces, but I know there are a lot of people are, and I know that they see a lot of productivity happening in these places and being surrounded by people from all different kinds of industries and one thing or another. I know how it can be conducive to the entrepreneurship of a business or something along those lines. So it's a co-working space startup that offers one-stop co-working space service solutions for startups from large and small sizes to individuals. It not only disrupts the idea of traditional office spaces, but has also accelerated the emergence of new species in the internet era by embedding IP in the physical space and optimizing the ecosystem. What I do like is that the workspaces kind of center around stuff where they've got human resources under one roof, business advice under one roof, media transmission, medical, sports, travel, financial services, everything all happening in under one roof. And it was founded in 2015 in Beijing, right? And now it's grown to more than 100 locations in over 30 cities around the world, including Singapore, New York, LA, San Francisco, London, servicing over 3,000 enterprises and 40,000 individual members in total.
Right.
So despite what I've said at the beginning about me not liking it, 40,000 people clearly have got something out of it.
Because I'm always thinking, I love this whole idea of co-working spaces and why some work and why some don't, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking, so what's the USP with this place? I said, I see. So you can get all your different sort of services under one roof. Okay, I'll just try and check with those guys from travel if they've got an idea for me.
Yeah, I've worked with in co-working spaces before and I love the energy from it because you have so many creative people and it's always the idea of if you're with the same people all the time, you get the same ideas. But if you want to bounce idea from somebody else who is from a different industry altogether or a different skill set altogether, you can just walk over, have coffee with that person, bounce ideas, then come back and like, now I'm going to have something, evolve my idea or pivot my idea to something else. Immediately, you have all these people who you can test ideas with, bounce ideas with, and have such great creative energy. And if you don't have your own HR department or finance department and everything is already there, you network so much quicker.
I think that's why you know some places don't work. It's like, I still have to go outside for HR, but
This is what I was thinking. I mean, the idea of being able to bounce ideas around off other people, I think, is a great idea. But when you're trying to focus on your idea after having your ideas, this, for me, would be distracting because there'd be so many different things happening that, I mean, I find it difficult to focus as it is. You know, and in a space like this, it might, I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of co-working spaces are made out to look really fun and open concept mostly. So you have all the bean bags, you have your pool table and things like that.
But I think they're also quiet corners.
Yes. Yeah. So they have small cubicles or capsules which you can retreat into. I mean, a lot of the co-working spaces have different tiers. You can be in a common office or you can also have a room which you can rent on an hourly basis. And that's the beauty of it.
There's quite a few around KL, right?
Yeah.
There is. And we'll be moving to one. Yes. But I love this concept. I think Arvind's interviewed this guy as well out in Bali, Ubud, you know, the hub. And it's just working out, looking at the paddy field, you know, and I can just picture one in Sarawak, you know, because just came back there.
I mean, I remember Arvind sharing a video of that and me watching that. And I'm thinking, who wouldn't want to work in Bali, right? And the idea of it is great. Yeah. And when they're following these people and you know, it's, they painted as such a wonderful picture of working on your laptop in this little cafe, you know, drinking fresh coconut juice. And I'm like, that can't be real.
Looking out into the sea.
Out at the sea, I like the idea of it, but I don't know how productive I would be in one of these spaces. I mean, I'm going to have to try and figure it out, right? I mean, you've been to one, like you've just said. Frida, have you kind of sat down and experienced it?
I think I'm all right, though. I can sort of like go to my moments and my corners and all that, but I think it's just a vibrancy of just seeing different people.
I think you're right. I mean, I went to Google's not too long ago, and they do have a bunch of different co-working spaces, and they have the nooks that you were talking about as well, where you can kind of just get away from it and just sit down and kind of focus. And, you know, that's my little quiet corner.
I think you're just sort of making references to our workplace, right? Because we're kind of open. And there is no nook.
Right, there is no nook. Exactly.
I think the idea is balance. What would be great is if you have your own office and you're working with your team, but then you may spend once a week or once every 2 weeks, you go out of your office and sit in a co-working space and be surrounded by all these people who have all this creative idea and just get a different vibe. I think the change of perspective, I think, would be really good for creativity.
But the idea of being raising another 45 million, though, we know these guys are going to go far, aren't they? We're probably seeing, if they're down in Singapore, it can't be that long before we end up seeing one here in KL.
Sure.
Let's see.
The demand is clearly there. I mean, we see, like you mentioned, we have all these co-working spaces popping up everywhere already right now. And they are getting more and more affordable. There's all these tiers that you can have a long-term lease, you can have an hourly rate, or just what is great is if you have a network of co-working spaces like this and you are a traveler and I'm in town for a week, I'm there. And then I have a pass that I'm in town for another week somewhere else and I have an office everywhere around
the
world.
In the same way that the gym passes work sometimes.
Right.
All right.
Before that, I was just thinking about where my nook is. I go home.
You go home, yeah. I do about the same thing, yeah. Right. Some music coming up. The Red Hot Chili Peppers with Soul to Squeeze. When we come back, final stories from the day. We're going to be talking about food tech, how augmented and virtual reality will reshape the food industry, and there is now a Tinder for food that could help save the environment. I have no idea what that is. I'm sure we'll find out more in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to BizBytes. Final story of the day. It's all about food tech, starting off with how augmented and virtual reality will reshape the food industry. Chefs listening at home.
Yeah.
Be careful. Be careful, Majida. Be careful what you say here. Come on.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to talk about three techs. We start off with virtual reality and augmented reality, right? So where virtual reality is concerned, it's about creating this visual world that you can interact, and it's so detailed that it is as if it is a real world itself. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about this is that you can use it for training. So a lot of people are using virtual reality to start now learning how to cook noodles, on how to create that perfect espresso pool. But also that if you're having this holiday rush, right, you need to layan a lot of people. So it's the training simulation of it. So that's very interesting in using it, virtual reality for where in the food tech industry.
So it's YouTube in your head.
Yeah.
Effectively, because that's how a lot of people learn how to cook nowadays.
Right. Yeah. And because headsets are getting cheaper, a lot of it's getting more practical. Sometimes if you're going to make a mistake, better do it in the virtual world than instead of reality. Now, this one is one, but augmented reality is what I think will really take off, especially where events is concerned. The whole thing about food and augmented reality is all circled around events and experiential marketing. There are a lot of people who are pumping a lot of money now into augmented reality and food, especially like the event of Museum of Ice Cream, 29 Rooms, where it turns into an event itself. When you go there, you have all this pop-up, your stickers and all, and that's an element of interactivity. Coca-Cola had a Christmas magic campaign recently where they gave users ability to see a virtual Santa and hidden scenes across bus stops. So they put these codes behind bus stops that are driving around. And if you have the app, you just put up your phone and you have hidden scenes or you have Santas popping around. And it is also being used now to educate customers about nutritional information, about how to cook. You have cookbooks now. And if you put your phone over, it shows you the different measurements and how the food will look like when it's done.
I tell you what was one of my favorite food apps a little while ago. You basically told the app what you'd got in your fridge and your cupboard.
And you
pushed a button and it would randomly spit out a recipe and said, this is what you could make with what you have. As a student, that was a wonderful idea.
Yeah. What are the most random stuff that you will have in your fridge?
All kinds of stuff.
Jelly beans and potatoes.
Exactly. That kind of stuff. You look at it, you're like, I can't make a meal out of this. Thankfully, bump, there you go.
Yeah. And if you have VR and AR, it will actually show you how the final product will look like, which is interesting. Yeah. But then I think what practically everybody has now are apps. And let's not even get started with all the food ordering apps that everybody has now. But what an interesting story that we found this morning is how... there is an app that is tackling the issue of food waste. So now, one third of all the food that is produced right now is actually thrown away. And this is bad because you have food that's one we could feed people. But the other one is that it releases methane, which is a harmful gas. It's more harmful than carbon dioxide. It's going to the landfills. So this app is called Olio, and it's a mobile phone app that has raised actually £1.65 million from two rounds of investor funding, so right. It's a well-padded app. It was launched in January last year. It now has 322,000 registered users, mostly in UK, and more than 400,000 food items having been shared. How this app does is that you download Olio onto your phone. It creates an account, you upload a photo and a short description of the food that you want to give away, and it ranges from bananas or fresh herbs. If you have food in your fridge and it's like, I know I'm not going to eat it, or I have too much fish curry that I've cooked and I don't want to eat it, if I can find somebody who I can give it away to within my 100 meter radius, then why not?
See, something like this would be ideal for times like now,
right,
and for Chinese New Year and for Hari Raya, where there's tons of food waste.
The founder of this founded this app because she said that they were actually clearing the office fridge and they needed to give away all this food which was still good, and they didn't know who to give it to, and that's how they developed this app. A third of the users of this app they found are actually people from poor households, and cafes and supermarkets like Sainsbury's are now jumping on board so that they can give away almost expired food as well.
I like how it's called Tinder for food.
And it's Tinder for food.
All right, we better wrap up though, Medida. Anything more to add to your story?
No, that's good. I think it's great because you can also private message yourself, and there's a user rating, so it's a legit app.
Where's the
for
money
food?
In this?
That's where Sainsbury's and Tesco are coming along, right? There'll be a little of that. There'll be something for them. Right, we have to wrap up, though. But let's quickly run through the stories that we started off with today. First, I took a look at how AI has taken a new look at Christmas in creating Christmas carols and creating a whole new Christmas story.
And then we spoke about how VR and sports-oriented entertainment center Smash in India landed $14 million for expansion. And of all places, it's in India, and so advanced as compared to so much part of the world.
Right, and then we talk about what's expected out of Proton and Perdua for 2018.
I then spoke about the co-working space, the unicorn, your work, expanding across the US with a $45 million new investment.
And then I spoke about how techs such as VR, AR and apps are reshaping the food industry.
Now, don't go anywhere because, of course, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay with the Morning Run crew. They're looking back at the year in review on key sectors of the economy. This episode, they'll be looking back at the performance of the automotive industry and developments within the transport infrastructure. Of course, we just gave you a story about Proton versus Perdua.
Right.
We're smart people, you see.
I
Frida.
Know.
See?
And then tomorrow.
Tomorrow will be our very own look back at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. In fact, I will be hosting at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. That's going to be a first. I better make sure I'm here on time, hadn't I? Right. Anyway, do not go anywhere, folks. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. And if you missed any part of this show, don't forget, you can download our app from the App Store or from Google Play. And if you're old-fashioned like me, head over to bfm.my/podcast. You can have a listen there. That's all we have all the time. That's all the time we have for today. Some music coming up with The Cure. Why Can't I Be Like You? Here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.